everything that's happened over the past few months, we at West felt very strongly that we wanted to create something that would, one, be impactful for African American women business owners, and two, provide insight to supplier diversity and procurement professionals about the journey that African American women take as they attempt to get contracts with corporate America. I think that the walking in the shades of success conversation meet both of those goals. The walking in the shades of success conversation is just that. It's a conversation between four African American women business owners and a moderator who at one point in time was a WBE and now works for a corporation. The conversation is impactful, it's insightful, and it is extremely powerful. So I hope that you enjoy, and please let us know what you think.
All right, good afternoon, ladies. My name is Lily Otieno. I'm currently the portfolio manager for major construction projects and programs at Southern California Gas Company. I've been in the diversity world for so many years that I don't care to say, but it's been a journey working alongside all the ladies today that you will meet. It's been a rewarding journey, and it's also been a journey where we have moments where we learn. Today's conversation is really much pigging back on the social injustice that the country has experienced. But as we look at all the changes that are happening and where the conversations is going, we realize very quickly, like we've always known, that African-American women are always thought of less. There is a perception and a reality for us where they say women, but when you look at the corporate numbers in diversity, African-Americans as a population, we're about 14.3% or maybe 13, depending on what census numbers you're looking at. But when you look at procurement within the African-American, especially women, we are at the lower numbers, about 3% to 4%. So as we look at this conversation, we want to ask ourselves, what can we do to be in the conversation? What can we do to help everyone else understand that diversity is also, there's diversity in the diversity. There's also a need for the numbers to speak for us. And there's a need for us to do more, or to pivot and reframe how we look at African-American women in business, so we are able to overcome and we're able to have equitable numbers as the general women business population. So with that, I'd like to introduce the panel. I'm very excited to have this wonderful women with me with so much to say, a lot of experience. And my sisters, we've known each other, I think I've known everyone for a good over 10 years in general. So looks like we've known each other for 60 years today. So I'm super excited. I'm super excited to get ongoing. So I'll start with asking Pat Watts to introduce herself. Give us a little bit about your name, your background, your business. And then we'll go down and follow suit before we start the conversation. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, I am Pat Watts, and I am president and CEO of FCI Management. We are an energy solutions company that specializes in energy efficiency and renewable energy technologies. We are a program implementer for utility companies where we actually implement their energy efficiency programs for them. And we are also an electrical and general contractor.
Thank you, Ms. Lily, for this opportunity. My name is Rhonda Jackson. I am a serial entrepreneur, small business advocate, and host of a YouTube TV show called The Road to Recovery. My core business is design and construction, and we are also a Benjamin Moore authorized retailer.
Hi, how are you? And thanks for the opportunity. My name is Sharon Coleman, and I am the president of Coleman Construction, which is a general engineering construction company, and we specialize in carpentry and concrete work. And then I'm also president of the National Association of Minority Contractors here in Southern California, and National Association of Minority Contractors is a national organization with several chapters in numerous states throughout the United States. And we are outreach for minority firms. We help build capacity of our minority contractors here in Southern California.
Okay, good afternoon. I am Barbara Myrick. I'm the president of B&M Construction. We are located in the Front Range of Colorado Springs, Colorado. We are an A1 general contractor. We are an electrical contractor and space plan and design furniture procurement contractor. We are the one-stop shop for our government clients and municipalities.
Thank you so much, ladies, for that great introduction. And so, as you can hear, you have so much experience. You've been in the business for quite a while. I'd like to know, just by background, how did you get into working for major corporations? And what were some of the obstacles, challenges you had to overcome to get your first or your second contract and maybe your largest contract to date? So I'll start and I'll just have it go however you want to go. Maybe whoever wants to go first can go. But basically, give us a little bit of your background into how you got into the supplier diversity world and your journey towards getting your first, the biggest contract. What were some of the challenges? How did you get in? And how did you start?
Well, sure. I always love to go first. You know, I think that basically I was blessed. I don't want to be clear, but I don't want to say lucky, because I wasn't lucky, I was blessed. And I had an opportunity to have a great career working for Southern California Edison, and I had an opportunity to take an early retirement package. It was an amazing package, it was very lucrative, and thousands of employees at that time took that same package. And although it was an early retirement and I am considered a full-fledged retiree, I was still too very young to actually retire. So when I started the company, I actually started the company bringing back retirees to Southern California Edison, because in certain areas they had some real institutional brain drain and they needed those folks back. And so that is how we got our first contract with the corporation. It's essentially bringing back people who had worked for that and had that experience that they needed, and we're able to provide them that service. And then as time went on, because I really did have a very good in-depth knowledge of the utility space, when they had the energy crisis in 2001, I thought to myself, what are we going to be doing now? You know, we've been working in transmission distribution business unit, but now we've got an energy crisis. And I said, oh, we've got a crisis. So our next biggest opportunity is really going to be in the energy efficiency space. And that's really where we got our organic growth. And from there, I was just able to leverage getting contracts, you know, based on that experience and based on what we were able to do. And they were competitive. And so for the most part, my contracts are driven by RFPs and not so just someone giving me a contract. So that's really how I started. And again, I say that's a blessing.
Yeah, and it's rare that we have a business like yours where you were part of the utility and come back as a quote unquote retiree and set up business. So that is indeed a blessing. And that's one route that we find for most of the times, it's a shorter way to getting a contract, in that you already know the players, they already know you, and there's a comfort level in working with you. Pivoting back to Rhonda, I know your journey isn't the same as Pat's. And so how did you start? And I know you've had several businesses, and how is that viewed as you were growing your business and as you are developing your journey? So give us a little bit an insight into Rhonda's journey to today.
Thank you, Lily. So similar to Pat, though, crisis and challenge will always create change. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it stemmed from. We were a boutique residential interior design firm at the end of what I like to call 2000 and oh no. And I saw myself with a depleted client base. You know, homeowners weren't looking at remodeling as, you know, intently as they had been in the past. So my revenues were declining, and that was my sole practice at the time. So I didn't have multiple streams of revenue coming in. And I just went back to my roots, and a lot of my design background was in commercial. So approached some of the friends that I knew worked for offices and buildings. And I had gotten an introduction to a facility manager at Warner Brothers, and who had seen another, you know, person's home that I had done. And she asked me to come in for one office. And that kind of started the journey. It really catapulted me. And I would say the thing that helped the evolution of my business was the opportunity to work so closely with this particular woman who actually happened to be African American. And she introduced me to her procurement officer. I think a few of you know Marilyn Newton at the time was at Warner Brothers. And she was like, wait, Rhonda, you're African American and you're this and you're a woman. And there's some things here, we need to talk. And when she introduced me to that language and what that looked like for corporations, the first aha moment I had was, well, how many other people need this? And so I kind of started down that path of researching companies that were similar to Warner Brothers. They needed my services, and did they have these programs and opportunities available specifically for minority and women-owned businesses?
Very well said. So I see a trend here that you had an introduction and you had an American woman introduce you into the foray of corporate service. Is that similar for you, Pat? Was it an African American, or did you already know the people there and that's why you were able to get in? It's always, everybody always asks, how did you get in?
So no one's ever asked me though that question. And that is actually a really good question, because in fact, it was an African-American male, who was a manager of the department, the transmission distribution department, who said, you know, if you bring me back X Edison people, I can give you a direct contract. So that's what led me to my first contract. And again, I leveraged that, but I had worked in that company for over 24 plus years. And I really had a good reputation. I was in management. A lot of people knew me. And because of that, I was able to leverage more relationships for additional opportunities. And so, but I have to give credit to that brother who was the first one who said, I can give you a direct contract.
Absolutely. I feel like the journey begins with another person pulling you up, and having known you and built credibility, somebody pulled you on and said, hey, look at this. There's an opportunity here. And same with Rhonda. And so I'll pivot back to Sharon. And Sharon, it's the same question. What is your journey to your first contract as you went through to get your first corporate contract? And how did that happen?
I actually started in residential right after the 94 earthquake. I had Lord had blessed me to have previous construction experience, and I was, at that time, I thought it was a babysitting job, but as I got to learn more, I was a foreman, an underpaid foreman at that.
We're going to jump into the pay discussion pretty soon, but I'm glad you bring it up.
An underpaid foreman, because I didn't know I was a foreman, so I was underpaid. So meantime, between time, I went back after being a foreman for a while, for a number of years, I wind up going back into the job market, and the company I was working for had a big layoff, and I wind up back in construction. So when I took my test, it was right after the earthquake, and I was working for a public adjusting firm. So all of my clients that I was working for under that public adjusting firm decided to come with me. So I almost built myself, me and the Lord built ourselves a clientele and a construction company, because that wasn't my original plan for my life. So it just happened to fall that way. And then I think my first large company contract was with a church. And when I went out to meet and walk the job, they asked me to come back with the owner of the company. So I had to bring my foreman back, and I told him he could do all the talking. I said, but once the contract is signed, then I'll start talking. So once the contract was signed and they had questions, he would refer them back to me. So we had quite a few of those. So we knew how to play the game in order to keep everybody's family fed.
You know, you bring up such a, you bring up two great points that were part of the discussion for me, is that we sometimes as African-American women have to change the fact that we're not the owners of that business so that we can get business. And mm-hmm. you definitely did do that. And I want to just take that for a little bit before I come back to you, Barbara, and just talk about how many of you have gone through that, where you had to make yourself not the owner of the business so that you can get that business. And how was that? Did they perceived it well for Sharon? They like, okay, there's a male, definitely in construction, we don't see women. And up to that, we don't see African-American women. So that was a double challenge right there. But how did, yeah, did, does anybody else have that experience?
So your question kind of reminds me of when I first started in construction, and we started in residential foundations. And my husband is, he was the face, I was the face of the company, but he would go out and get the work. And my experience with this is one day I went to my job site, and it was a huge contract. We were doing storage facilities here in Colorado Springs. And I went to the job site to check on my crew, and a gentleman came up to me and said, can I help you? And I said, well, I'm here to check on my crew. And he said, your crew? So he's looking around like, what crew are you looking for? And I said, oh, those are my guys over there doing the foundation. He was totally offended. He said to me, I've been a general contractor here in Colorado Springs for over 20 something years. And you tell me you have a front loader and a dozer, and you have a crew of 30 people, and you can make your payroll. Totally upset. It went downhill after that. And then my husband said to me, I told you not to go to the field. And I said, I have a right to go to the field. Those are my employees. I need to go check on their safety. And I need to make sure that they have the things that they need to be successful. And after that, it went downhill. The guy chose not to pay us over $250,000. And at that time, it was a hard discussion with my husband. I said, I will not be that Black woman I will not be a woman where my husband, I am the woman, I am the owner of the company, and someone else is the face of the company. I will not do that. And so it was just a huge, painful lesson. But at that time, he learned about racism. He was white. He didn't experience it. I experienced it. And so he just could not believe that it happened. But that gentleman was upset because I was a Black woman. I had 38 employees. I had a dozer, a front loader, and I was on his job site working. And so Sharon, you're right. My husband was the face. He went and met with them and had the conversation. And then we signed the contract, and I had to go. I went to the field, but he said, Barb, never go to the field. Well, I went to the field, and it wasn't good after that.
And so I can see how that is something that in future, as we're discussing these conversations, how can we be part of the discussion and accept having African-American women as CEOs, as owners, and able to do construction in a storage site to add to that. So I see the economic impact of being an African-American was actually not rewarded in this instance for your case, Barbara, and how much you had to stand on your feet and have a discussion with your husband, who I understand is a white male. So it's yeah. easy for him to go out and get the contracts. Then they see you, then they're like, who is this? Why right. is this woman here? And what does she bring to the table? But I hope that that journey has softened up for you. Is it better now? Can you just expand a little bit? Have you continued to see such institutional change in your journey, Barbara?
So about 3 years ago, There's only three women A general contractors here in Colorado Springs, and I'm the only one of color. I still don't believe that there are enough women of color in the industry, the electrical industry, the utility industry, the construction industry. My journey was very challenging, but it took a contracting officer at Fort Carson, who was white, to tell a white large business that she's not a dumb black chick. She's thinking, she's processing, she's very intelligent, she is engaged in a conversation, and that's the one that will get you in trouble. And in the process of that, a large business did get debarred, a contracting officer did get debarred as well. But I think they underestimate us as women. They think that we're just angry black women, but we're very intelligent. We have something to offer. We raise our children. We contribute to the community. We volunteer, not just in our schools and in the PTAs. We're very involved in the church. And I think they fail to see that. And in my journey, I've had to still work hard. And I was talking about this the other day, and my coach said to me, I need you to stop sharing so much, because you share so much and you help people so much that they go up the ladder, they step over you and they forget about you. But then they'll come down the ladder when they get in trouble and they have to come back and ask you a question. And you're so free to give the information to them. But in that process, they're up here and they're forgetting about the person that helped get them there, or the person that counseled them. And so I had to take a look, stop and look at Barbara and say, but I'm a giver. And I think as African-American women, we are givers. And we sometimes fail to look at those things because of our faith and our love for the Lord and those things that people mean for bad, you know? We forget those things. And so my journey, I still journey today. I still have struggles today, but I just keep going. I'm that visionary that God has sent to be in this position at that time that I will not say no. And I cry a lot and I just keep going. But I just commend black women, especially those in the utilities and the electrical and the construction, those that's in IT and design. I commend Dr. Pamela Williams for what she does. And when I look at us, I know our struggles. I know our heartaches. I know our tears. I know those things because I live them. I think all of us live them every day.
Wow. It's such a journey for us. And you've brought up some very good points, which is, we are givers as African American women. We are givers. We are taught to share. We are taught to just keep going. And one of the things that have come in this social injustice conversations is that we've been taught as a society, dating back all the way to slavery, the reason we were able to survive was because of our need for higher power, but also the fact that we were taught to always be the bigger person, number one. Always be able to ignore a lot of the time. We ignore a lot of the microaggressions that happen. We ignore unprofessionalism so we can keep forging ahead. And as you speak, Barbara, that's pretty coming out clear that it's innate in us as a strong community, and we always all pull out because we've been taught for generations and generations to pull forward regardless of the circumstances. And this is a great opportunity for us to do the same. We are being called upon to stand right now, let our voices be heard, and be part of the corporate decision-making process. Major corporations right now are asking, how can we help? And it's not just increase the African-American procurement, it's also, please take a look at African-American women procurement and see where they sit at the table. So thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you for tuning in to segment one of Walking in the Shades of Success. I promise you that the second segment is just as powerful, just as impactful, and just as insightful. So I hope you enjoy it.